supply chain. The White House today doubled down on its stance that it won't force the striking dock workers back on the job and insisted that impacts to America's vital goods will be minimal for now. In a statement, the Longshoremen's Association president, Harold Daggett, said, quote, "We are prepared to fight as long as necessary to get the wages and protections against automation our ILA members deserve." Close quote. For WPFW News in Washington, I'm Sue Goodwin.
Good afternoon, Washington, D.C., Maryland, Virginia, wherever you are tuned in. You are listening to Taking Action here on WPFW 89.3 FM in Washington, D.C. My name is Daniel Del Piélago, and as always, I want to thank you for your listenership and for your support and for tuning in on this rainy Tuesday afternoon. I am very excited and honored and thankful to have Patricia Molloy on the radio with me. She is a longtime community leader, housing advocate. I'm going to let her introduce herself, but I just wanted to say thank you, Ms. Molloy, for joining me this afternoon.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Patricia Molloy, and I wear numerous hats. Just to name a few, I'm a former ANSI commissioner for 7C01 from 2005 to 2022. I am also a former public housing resident, living in Lincoln Heights. I was president of the resident council from 2006 to 2022. I was also chair of the New Community Initiative through DMBAD as the chair of the New Community. And I also been on numerous boards with our former mayor, Vincent Gray, and on other committees when he was council member.
Thank you again so much for joining me. You know, I thought we've been talking now for a couple of months around some issues that are affecting the public housing authority and public housing residents, of course. But I wanted to start just with a few minutes, Ms. Molloy, to give folks an update on what's happening with this ERAP legislation. ERAP stands for the Emergency Rental Assistance Program. And it's a program that is supposed to help folks who have fallen behind on their rent and are in an emergency situation of getting evicted. It appears that the mayor and the city council and housing providers want to blame renters and say that the cause for the high rate of arrearages in the city is due to this emergency rental assistance program. There's a narrative out there that's been put out there by the mayor, in my opinion, that is saying, you know, people are gaming the system. They are depending on this program to get their rent paid. And because of this, you know, people aren't paying their rents and are causing these high rate of arrearages. So what's happening now is that the housing providers, many housing providers, both affordable housing providers, but then just, you know, your run-of-the-mill market rent providers are running with that and pushing these changes on the ERAP program. So the ERAP program is already in jeopardy because for this fiscal year, it's funded at, I think, lower than half of what it was funded for this past fiscal year. I think it's only funded at about $27 million, so it won't be able to help as many people as it's helped in the past. And now there are restrictions, and some of the the protections that were put in place after COVID, that were put in place to help residents, are being taken away. So in the ERAP program, they are going to have the judge decide if it's an emergency or not. They're going to take away the provision of getting a stay, a hold on your case if you are in eviction court. They want to do away with that, just give you one stay, and then after that, it's the judge's discretion. They want to take away self-certification, so folks who you know, may not have access to all of the documents, and I think this is a small percentage of people who may not have all of the necessary documents and have to self-certify. They want to take that all away. And once again, the narrative is that, you know, the mayor had a hearing, a press conference yesterday along with a council member to talk about this. And, you know, what I heard from her is that, you know, somebody, one of the reporters there posed a question, you know, how is this actually going to help, right? Like, if this is all true and you, and you know, people can't do these things through the ERAP program, it doesn't really get at the fact that the rents are just very, very high in the district. Many are inaccessible, and there aren't enough jobs that pay enough for folks to be able to pay rent and everything else in such an expensive city. So currently, the district council will be voting on this emergency legislation. There's been a great amount of pushback from tenants, from advocates, saying, you know, we shouldn't pass this on an emergency basis. We need to sit down and think of better ways of improving the program. There are many administrative issues that delay, you know, the eviction process, such as landlords not doing their part of the work to ensure that they can receive the ERAP money, which would be in their benefit. So at the end of the day, if this bill goes through the way it's written, you know, tenants aren't going to be able to pay their arrearage. Landlords aren't going to get any money for, you know, the rent that they're owed. And, you know, I don't know who will come in behind them that'll be able to as well keep up these very, very high rent payments. We all understand that this is not a free world, unfortunately, and we have to pay the rent, but the alarm bells are ringing. The red flags are waving, saying, you know, there is a problem here in the district with inaccessible rents. You know, as somebody who has been so involved in the housing space for such a long time, you know, what is your reaction to all of this? What do you think of all of this?
With my concern and a question that I would like to email to the council chair and to the mayor, for the people that apply for ERAP in April, have all of the residents that apply been notified if they are eligible or non-eligible? What's going to happen to those group of people? Because they didn't even put it out that ERAP was being delayed. If people didn't log into the portal, they would not have known that they weren't taking ERAP applications today. But my main concern is, what's going to happen to the residents that applied for ERAP in April? That will be my question to them on that one.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And thank you for reminding me of that. As a result of this legislation being introduced as an emergency, the mayor and by extension, the Department of Human Services, who administers the Emergency Rental Assistance Program, decided to close the opening of the portal. The ERAP portal had been opening on a quarterly basis and was due to reopen today. Mm-hmm. So all of that has been frozen. And as you say, who knows at what level, what rate they're, you know, processing the applications, most importantly, processing the payments for those folks who qualify and who, you know, deserve to get this this help. It just means that this delay, it means that people are going to fall further and further into an arrearage. And we're not really looking at the real problem. Right. We're not looking at the real systemic problems that exist in this city, and you know, you can argue around this country, where low-income people, you know, are just having a very, very hard time keeping it all together in the sense of paying rent, paying for, you know, food, health care, and just to have a decent quality of life. You know, everybody wants to go out to get a bite to eat. Everybody wants to take their kids to, you know, a movie or something. And that is all becoming increasingly hard to do in this city. And in my opinion, when we've spoken to tenants about this, there's a sense of who cares about us, right? Nobody cares about us. We kept getting everything piled on us, right? There's the costs that that many people have to burden. And now it seems that all the protections that were brought to light because of COVID, that we feel it wasn't an emergency. COVID didn't cause those issues. Those issues right. were already existing. The rent was already expensive. You know, people already needed help. So once again, it's kind of playing hot potato with these very serious issues that our city has decided to not invest in one way or another. We've seen, you know, vouchers getting cut. They don't want to pay on the vouchers that they said they would fund for this fiscal year. And once again, you know, while they haven't said this directly, all of the messaging is pointing that this is somehow, you know, low income renters' fault, that they are creating this issue around the arrearages. When, you know, let's play the devil advocate and say, yes, maybe there are some people who have decided to not pay their rent. But by and large, we know people work hard. People try their best mm-hmm. to make ends meet and to pay the rent. But sometimes when you live in such a system, you fall behind and you need some right. help.
That's true.
So we encourage folks to, you know, keep their ears open about what happens with this legislation. We feel like it's going to have, you know, some strong repercussions. It could potentially increase an already high, very high eviction rate in this city, and of course put people at threat of experiencing homelessness, right? People being out on the street, having to double up, couch surf, and just not having the access to safe, decent and constant housing. So we wanted to put that out there to WPFW's listeners. I know there's been a couple of other shows that have touched on this, but it's so important. We wanted to make sure that we are uplifting what's happening. As I understand it, the city council is currently deliberating on this. They are meeting today they have a legislative meeting where they will be voting on this. I'll give some more details. Empower DC is having a meeting next week to where we will debrief what happens today and talk about what really happens. Because what we really feel, and this is why I really appreciate Ms. Malloy being on, because we really need to hear tenants' voice, right? The people who are directly affected by these decisions and policies, we really need to hear their voice centered in these discussions, because it's not happening. It's not happening. They're hearing from one side of the story. And while there may be some validity to, you know, understanding that, yes, if landlords don't receive the full rents that they are owed because of the contracts they signed with their renters, that could cause some problems. Once again, there are larger systemic issues that have to be dealt with, and we can't just, you know, play the blame game and hot potato and hope that these problems go away. With that said, Ms. Malloy, as you mentioned, you've been your former public housing resident. You've been a advisory neighborhood commissioner in your neighborhood. And so you've seen the changes in public housing over the years. You've been through several administrations, I imagine, leadership, you know, at the DC Housing Authority. Can you share with us, before we get into the topic at hand, we're actually going to be discussing the Housing Authority's move to change the operating subsidy of its property. So right now, the public housing, which is referred to as Section 9 under HUD, the Housing and Urban Development from the federal government, the Housing Authority plans to change all of its properties to project-based Section 8. And we'll get into those details. But before that, Ms. Molloy, I just wanted you to talk a little bit about, you know, how have you seen the housing authority change over the years? Has it gotten better? Has it gotten worse? Has it stayed the same? You know, give us a little bit of your experience.
The housing authority, I've lived in Lincoln Heights 44 years. The housing authorities have changed. We were able to, when the housing authority went into receivership, we were able to get things done. They were able to hire staff, get materials, start working in people's units. But as we came back to being, I guess you would say, when they decided to put a board, things are not getting done as fast as the way it was before. It takes too long. It was taking too long to get materials. They couldn't distinguish between what was an emergency and what was a non-emergency. I noticed a change in the staff. It was as though we were at the bottom of the totem pole. The residents wasn't given the respect that they deserve. We all are not bad. We are all are not bad. We know we got some that needs a little bit more training, but it was though we were a stepping stone. And it just took a long time to get work done. And yes, we went through a lot of directors. We've had some good ones and we've had some fair ones. But Housing Authority has changed along with their name.
And, you know, it's interesting because part of these, this change in leadership, this just change in the process over the years, has led to delays in many of their own plans, right? So, for example, sure. You mentioned living in Lincoln Heights. Lincoln Heights has been part, at least in name, of the New Communities Initiative since its inception some 20 years ago, right? When they thought it up and passed some legislation. They began with Berry Farm and Park Morton. And although they've begun on those properties, it's taken quite a while. They've demolished, and they're just now, just this year, delivering one building, a senior building at Berry Farm. And I think they either later this year or earlier next year, they expect to deliver some housing at Park Morton. But meanwhile, Lincoln Heights, Richardson Dwellings, which was part of that plan, we've not seen much happen there. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
All right. I was relocated. Okay. We've built 5 off-sites under the New Community Initiative, which is, we have 9 units on C Street, which is called Marlon Ridge. That's managed by Benning Terrace Property. We have 4800 Manning Helen Borough, which is managed by Private Management. We have 25 units there. We have 5201 Hayes, where we have 30 units there. Here at the Strand, we have 30. And Providence Place, we have 38. All of our off-site is in the perimeter off of Nanny Helen Borough or 50th Street. Our units, the units that the Housing Authority and DMPAD, under the New Community Initiative, we are project-based voucher units. We are still in the Housing Authority's stock inventory, but we don't get the services or notices or any changes that the Housing Authority is putting in place. We know nothing about them. If it wasn't for Empower DC and my communication with you, I wouldn't know a lot of things that's going on. I guess we'll get into more detail about that as our conversation goes on. But the communication, it's as though they pushed us to the side. I've been here at the Strand Residency for 3 years. I never knew who my case manager was. I found out last month when I signed up for the Board of Commissioners meeting to speak. Out of the blue, the director of the voucher program called me and the person that's supposed to be my case manager. Why did it take me signing up for the Board of Commissioners meeting for you to contact me to ask me, do I have a problem? And I think that's really wrong.
That's right. No, and I think that speaks, and, you know, we always encourage people to join those meetings because they are public meetings and it creates a public record. They occur every second Wednesday of the month. And like you said, when you go out there, you put something in public, you know, it to a certain extent forces them to take some action. It may not be the silver bullet solution, but it does force them to take some action. So as I mentioned at the top when we were opening the show, we have been in discussions, yourself, along with other leaders in the public housing space, around some of the moves that the Housing Authority is making. And a couple of months ago, the Housing Authority released its what it's calling its three-year recovery plan. It's not a strategic plan. It's not a plan that lays out what they're going to do with their housing portfolio. It sets some general goals for each of the departments. And it actually omits an important department, the audit and compliance department, from its three-year recovery plan. So we've questioned why that important department in the agency is left out. We've not gotten a real answer on that. But well, let me ask you in general, you know, what did you think about this three-year recovery plan? It's a public document. You can find it on DCHA's website. But, you know, as a tenant, as somebody who's been involved, you know, how did you receive it? What did you think of it? How did you find out about it?
Well, I found out about it through Project Empower DC. And when I read the three-year recovery plan, my concern is the residents, the document had so many pages and you would have to print it out to read it. But the residents, because I've talked to a number of residents, they did not know anything about this plan. My question is, who was at the table? Who wrote this plan? Who wrote this application? How many residents was able to give input? I'm not talking about the resident council. I'm not talking about the board members. I'm not talking about the offices. I'm talking about individuals that actually live on the properties that are actually involved in the voucher program. How were they involved in implementing and writing this application to be submitted to HUD? Yes, they submitted it for six properties. Did those six properties residents sit at the table and give any input or thought to this section 18? Because from what I read, it's a manuscript. Mm-hmm. They're taking pieces from other applications that they have submitted to HUD to make it seem like they got input from the resident. I would like to see the survey they did before they submitted this application. Also, it's just a lot to this community meeting. One or two people can't make a decision. I, at the Board of Commissioners meeting, I even asked for could they provide documentation? In my 14 days, I have not gotten a response. Section 8 is not, right now, is not a good piece for DCHA. It's not a good piece to present to the residents because you want to make your entire portfolio project-based voucher. Where can you draw the line? Will there be no more public housing?
That well, and this is what was written, you know, so this all kind of happened right on the same track. And once again, you know, if you aren't really following this stuff, always on their website, looking at their meeting notes, looking at their documents, you wouldn't necessarily know that this is happening. So right around the time when they released this three-year plan, or even before it, actually, the Housing Authority filed they submitted resolutions to their board of commissioners. They call it the Star Board now, to approve six applications to change the subsidy of six public housing properties that include Greenleaf Public Housing in Southwest, Langston Terrace, Benning Terrace, Potomac Gardens, Horizon House, Hopkins. I may be missing one.
Benning Terrace. Did you name Benning Terrace?
I named Benning Terrace. I think that's all of them. And we'll make sure to repeat them before.
Was it Potomac Garden?
Potomac Gardens as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this big change that, you know, I heard from several residents at these properties that said, hey, what's happening? And we hadn't heard that much about it, right? And then what we see in the three-year recovery plan is that one of their goals is to change the operating subsidy for all of their properties. So as we understand it, you know, they plan to do this for all the properties in the district, all the public housing properties in the district, but there's no timeline necessarily, and there's no real plan on, as you mentioned, a key part and a very important part is how will residents be involved? As you mm-hmm. mentioned, you know, there are some established tenant groups. There is, in theory, a citywide advisory board that convenes and, you know, as the name implies, they're supposed to advise the housing authority. And there are also the resident councils. But, you know, there are also thousands of public housing residents whose voices are important to, you know, include in when these decisions are made. And that's been part something that we've heard quite a bit in the meetings we hold when we discuss these issues is, you know, how has the housing authority included these folks, other folks, in these conversations that will, you know, impact their lives directly. As we understand, you know, some of the concerns that we have is something you named, Ms. Malloy, is like, what is going to happen to public housing, right? Langston Terrace, for example, is the first public housing property here in the District of Columbia. It's only the second public housing in the country that was constructed for Black residents. And, you know, there's some beautiful architecture in Langston Terrace that was, you know, created by a Black man, a Black architect here in the district. So it is, you know, a protected, it has a historical designation, a national historic designation, but, you know, right now it's standing as public housing is being threatened because of this change. And there will be a lot of changes that occur, right? As we understand it, when these changes in subsidies happen, residents are often rescreened. Mm-hmm. So if, you know, if something they don't like comes up on the radar, as it were, many folks could be at risk of not being able to return to their public housing unit. They lose their right of grievance. There's a formal right of grievance right now with public housing residents. If something happens, it's actually changed, but prior to, you know, or right now, if a public housing resident feels that, you know, they've had some issue that's related to their housing, they can file a grievance and say, sure, you know, my property manager or this person, or you got this rent calculation wrong, you know, or you're charging me for something that you can file a grievance. And you have 30 days from the grieving offense, as they say. Before, public housing residents had a year to do that. Now they've changed it to 30 days, but nonetheless, you still have that. People will likely lose that under you know, being project-based Section 8, because they will not have the same rights as a public housing resident. Some of the other changes that we can expect, and you alluded to this a little bit, is potential utility rates or utility mm-hmm. charges, rather, right? Right now, that's all included in a public housing tenant's rent. But I think you've mentioned, you know, in your property, which is a project-based Section 8 property, you all get charged utilities. And right. once again, you know, as we were talking at the beginning of the show, that's a cost burden for folks, right? That's a cost that is hard for many people who have limited income. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Right. It will be a financial hardship because for you would have to pay your water bill, your electric bill. And if you are on a fixed income, as everyone knows, your water bill, electric bill, each month, it will be different. And you would have to make a choice between which one will you pay. But under the project-based voucher, if your utilities are disconnected, you lose your voucher. And a lot of public housing residents might not understand. Some residents have a hard time comprehending. Some residents can't read that well. And they need to realize if your utilities get cut off, you no longer have a voucher. And not only that, some residents don't realize, they think that because you get a voucher, it's a federal voucher. Project-based voucher is not a federal voucher. You can't take it and go anywhere. That voucher stays with the unit. If you move out, that voucher stays with the unit that you live in. That's what a project-based voucher is. That's why I'm saying you have to take baby steps with some people.
Mm-hmm.
And you just have to, it takes longer to explain some things to people for them to comprehend. So you just gonna turn a property into project based? When are you gonna tell them? I haven't seen anything in this recovery plan that says eventually you will be paying utilities.
Mm-hmm.
I see nothing in that. Now, in the public housing lease, you pay excess utilities, which is for washer, dryer, additional freezers, air condition, which is air condition is $7 per air condition. That's considered excess utilities attached to your rent. But straight utilities, you're being billed by Pepco and Wassa. And if it's gas, you'll be being billed by Washington Gas. The housing authority can't control that. You, the residents, the only one that can control that. And if you have a large family, they have to take showers. You have to cook. That's a financial burden bill. A person on TANF would not be able to deal with the extra utility cost.
That's right. And just, you know, heating in the winter, we're heading right. into the cold months of the year, you know, as these properties redevelop, so-called redevelop, they're going to electric. And in one hand, that may be a good thing for the environmental aspect of it, but also is going to cost, you know, so as you mentioned, financial hardship on folks because it'll be an extra cost.
That's why with the living here at the Strand, I can say the management company that we have is phenomenal. When I say phenomenal, because we do pay water, we pay our rent, we pay water, and we pay electric. The manager, which I'm going to name, Ms. Octavia, has gone out their way to get programs to come in to help us with our utilities. And they really cater mainly to seniors with the discount. But how many other properties would do that?
That's right.
Because if it wasn't for Mrs. Tavia, the management company, which is William C. Smith, but she's our community manager, sometime I wouldn't be able to pay my bill. And I'm on a fixed income, which is retirement. But once it's on TANF, it's really hard.
That's really hard. And thank you for sharing that, because I think there is something to be said about, you know, property managers who, you know, who work with residents, who care about residents. And that's the kind of level of support that is needed. But once again, as you mentioned, there is a lot, you know, public housing sites are huge. Many of them are. And there's a lot of it, right? And will this housing authority be able to procure that level of support for all their properties? And in general, you know, this is a big change for anyone, right? If you've been used to living and paying your rent a certain way and following certain regulations and having certain rights, and then all of a sudden it's going to change, and there's very little in the way of, you know, so one of the things that we've been pushing the housing authority to do is to simply be honest and write down, you know, here's what, you know, like a two columns, right? Here's what exists now, you know, and here's what will change. Here's what will be different. So, you know, at the very least, tenants will have that in writing and know what to expect as these changes come down the line. Because once again, we're seeing, you know, many forces and many actions being taken that put tenants at a disadvantage, right? That put tenants in a certain aspect in jeopardy of losing their housing. So we need to ensure that, you know, and we're glad to help as much as we can with this work. But I think this city and this agency has a responsibility to also do that. And, you know, for us, we want to get the word out, right? We want to let folks know this is happening, and expect something to happen. And there are, you know, resources out there for help. We hope we can work, you know, together and cooperatively with this housing authority. We hope that they listen and their plans are informed, you know, in a partnership with tenants and their allies. So that's the spirit we hope to move in. As these big changes occur here.
I have another question, Daniel. Mm-hmm. I've been thinking, and it's been on my mind, with the properties going project-based, I feel that somewhere in this application, will the housing authority continue to manage? It's supposed to be 52 properties, but I think it's down to 32 or 39. Will they continue to be the management for these properties once they are deemed project-based voucher properties? Will they continue to manage it, or will they contract it out for someone else to manage?
Exactly. And I think, you know, those are all the very appropriate questions that come up when folks start finding out about this, right? And recently, at the most recent Board of Commissioners meeting, I did pose that question to the board, you know, how will tenants get involved? How will tenants be informed about what's happening? Because we feel, from the conversations we've had with many public housing residents on these properties that are slated for this first round of subsidy change, that they have not been involved enough in what's going to happen or informed on what's really going to happen. The answer that we received was that, well, we're waiting for HUD to approve the applications, because the process is, once their board approves, the submission of the application to HUD, it's submitted to HUD. HUD then can take up to a year to approve these applications, and then, you know, they can put them into action. The housing authority can. So, you know, we feel that it's important to improve residents all along the way, right? Not just wait until a decision is made by HUD, because folks have heard about this right now. And once again, are left in this kind of weird space where something's going to happen. We don't know exactly what's going to happen, and it causes this insecurity that, you know, just isn't fair, and especially for low-income residents of the district, just causes another level of anxiety, of burden, of, you know, the unknown. So I think that's really important. Folks, you are tuned in to Taking Action here on WPFW 89.3 FM in Washington, D.C. We are joined by Patricia Malloy. She is a longtime D.C. resident. She has held many, many hats in her community, an ANC commissioner, president of her resident council. She's served on a number of boards, most I would say related to housing issues in the community.
True.
So she has quite an advantage, a great viewpoint on what's happening. So, Ms., I encourage, if folks have any questions, if they want to share anything, please feel free to give us a call. You can call us at 202-588-0893. But Ms. Pat, you know, I wanted to just to maybe talk a little bit about, you know, what can we do now, right? What can we do now? As I mentioned, we hope that we can work cooperatively with the housing authority. But as somebody who's been around a long time, and as you mentioned, you've been through the receivership, right? The receivership that happened in the 90s, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
But that's when the federal government got involved, right? And they sent folks to make sure that what needed to be done got done. There was probably more oversight over the operations of the housing authority. And what I've heard not only from you, but from many other public housing residents who lived through that experience is that things got better, because things got a little better when there, you know, there was a little more pressure on the housing authority to act right. Let me just leave it like that. So talk to us, you know, what do you think needs to happen? What needs to improve to make sure? Because it's my contention that the housing authority first needs to break down the trust gap that they have. The tenants simply don't trust the housing authority because, you know, there's so many broken promises. The conditions of public housing, of course, you know, are an issue. But, you know, as somebody, once again, who's been through all of this, you know, what do you think needs to happen? How can we improve this agency and, by extension, you know, the quality of life for public housing residents?
Number one, the first thing they need to do is to communicate with the residents. Regardless of how they do it, and I've always told residents, when a staff person tells you something or make a promise to do something, ask them to give it to you in writing. Give it to you in writing, give you a time frame, or you give them a time frame. If they can't give it to you in writing, ask them why they can't give it to you in writing. Like in the 90s, if the DCHA, well, it was Public and Assistant Housing, DPAR, if they would go back to doing newsletters monthly, put all the changes, put all the meetings for the Board of Commissioners meeting when they first started under the receivership, we would receive through mail a flyer of all the meetings for the entire year. Also, every month we would receive a newsletter with changes that's getting ready to take place. There was a comment corner where the residents could submit questions or comments on different things. There was recipes. There was always communication.
Mm-hmm.
But since we got out of receivership, I have not seen that happen. You and I have met with Director Pettigrew, I think, the second month that he was here, and I brought that up to him. Director Pettigrew made a commitment to me that he has not kept. Maybe it's because he's really busy. I'm not going to down him because he's trying to make some changes. But I asked him about a newsletter, and he said he would look into it. I haven't heard any more about it. On trying to keep the residents informed about what's happening on the Lincoln Heights property. But this would be a format for public housing and your voucher residents as well as to what's taking place. You know, at least they wouldn't be able to say, I didn't know this meeting was. And a lot of residents don't know how to register for the Board of Commissioners meeting.
Yeah, because they're all online now.
Mm-hmm. Right. And they should be given the option. They also should be given the option if they will put a suggestion box in each management office and let the residents write their questions, put it in that suggestion box, and someone from Office of Resident Services come around every week, every Friday, or every Monday to collect the information in that box and compile everybody's questions. If every property had the same question, that's telling you information is not getting out to them. We used to do that. The AUC used to have a suggestion box in the Mink Heights rental office. Mm. Resident services really did their part. You know, because resident services was made up of residents. They were made up of residents. Yes.
Yeah.
And that's how communication got out. But now we don't get communication.
Yeah. And I think that's one of, you know, the key themes that we hear year in, year out, you know, at every Board of Commissioners meeting, at every oversight hearing, is the fact that there is a real lack of true communication with residents. Not everybody is aware of, you know, property level issues and meetings and changes, and then system wide meetings and changes that are occurring. So, you know, at the center of it, I think that is a huge change that needs to occur. And then the other piece, you know, which goes along with it is, you know, we definitely want folks to be notified and informed and educated on what's happening, but also involved. Can you talk to us a little bit about, you know, that level of involvement?
Level of involvement is not there. Maybe on some, at one time I thought that they were better focusing their time and energy on our senior building, but the seniors seem to be having just much more problems at the family properties. So, you know, to me, what are their priorities? Because lately it's not maintenance.
Mm.
So what are their priorities?
That's right. No, that's right. Well, Ms. Malloy, I want to thank you so much, you know, for, firstly, for being on today and sharing your wisdom and knowledge and experience with us. I think you set a great example for, leadership at the grassroots level, right? You live in your community and you take leadership. And it's been my, you know, from my viewpoint, I see you as somebody that always tries to help out. You know, when I've knocked doors there at Lincoln Heights, oh, Miss Pat told me you were coming. You know, I didn't even know you knew that we were coming, but you do. And you let folks know. So that's always great. And we just want to encourage other listeners who may be public housing residents, voucher holders, is that, you know, there's a lot of changes coming.
It is.
You know, we need to get organized. We need to get educated and informed and really push back and make sure that your voices are heard when it comes to these big changes afoot. You know, as we begin to close out here, you know, any last words that you have for your community and, you know, for those decision makers that may be listening?
Sure, Daniel. I want to leave with everyone. Don't be afraid to speak up. Some residents and individuals feel because they owe rent or they are a nuisance on the property, they're afraid to open their mouth. Open your mouth and speak up. Let people know how you feel. Let people know what's not being done. Don't be afraid. I've always said, don't be afraid. I don't care how much you owe. Don't be afraid. You know, always speak up. If you can't speak up, how do people know how bad you really are hurting?
That's right. That's right. What do they say? Closed mouth doesn't get fed, I think is the saying.
Right.
That, so you
and
know.
They say that what the squeaky wheel always get
That's
the
right.
right there in the squeaky wheel.
That's our that's
Your
right.
concern is your safety and your peace of mind.
No, that is 100% right. So, you know, we'll be letting folks know how you can get involved in some of these, especially for public housing residents and voucher holders, and some of the, you know, work advocacy events that we'll be having and doing to bring attention and to make sure that tenant voice is involved in these changes.
Sure.
So thank you all for tuning in. Before we leave you, we want to let you know that on this coming Wednesday, October the 9th at 6:30 p.m., we'll be having a essentially a debrief meeting on what has happened with this ERAP legislation that the council is likely voting on right now. I know they're in session this afternoon. So join us. If you want to register, please give us a call. You can call me at 202-731-8634. You can also contact my colleague, Andrea, at 202-758-3978. You can also email us and we'll send you the registration link. You can email me, Daniel, at empowerdc.org, or Andrea, that's A-N-D-R-I-A, at empowerdc.org. And we'll make sure to send you the registration link because it's really important that, you know, folks get a good understanding, and we'll have a better understanding after today, after they vote on what they actually voted on. We'll see if they made any amendments to any of the changes that they're moving or introducing, rather, to the legislation they're introducing. And then, of course, you know, what are we going to do about it, right? Because once again, there are some very serious issues in this city and this country when it comes to affordable housing. And we need to make sure that people, you know, continue to have a safe, decent place to live where the rent just doesn't take over their lives, right? The rent is just taking over people's lives and making folks make some very, very tough decisions on, as Ms. Malloy mentioned earlier, right? Like, what do you pay? Am I going to pay the rent this month? Am I going to pay this hospital bill? Am I going to pay my baby's school stuff, you know, at the beginning of the school year? The holidays are coming. You know, these are all the very tough real life decisions and experiences that people have. So we want to make sure that we are centering resident voice and that folks, you know, really get to give some input. So once again, Ms. Malloy, thank you. Thank you so much for being on with us this afternoon, for sharing your knowledge and your experience. It's always a pleasure to talk with you. You know, we'll keep the good fight going, and we will be back next week with you. Make sure to stay tuned. In just a couple of minutes, you've got the news. After that, you've got capitalism, race, and democracy. But always, you know, as always, thank you all for tuning in here to Taking Action. It's a pleasure to be with you every Tuesday afternoon and bring you the voices of community leaders like Ms. Malloy, who joined us this afternoon. So with that, we wish you a good afternoon, and thank Ms. Malloy again, and we'll talk
thank
soon.
You.
Alrighty. Take care, everyone.
Okay.
Catch you next Tuesday. Thank you, Ms. Malloy.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Miyuki Williams.
And I'm Robin Holden. This is Reggae Music and the Reggae Experience present a WPFW fundraising concert featuring Image Band, Curlew Reggae All-Stars Band, Lady Flame, and Carl Malcolm.
On Saturday, October 5th, 7 p.m. until midnight at King Solomon Lodge, 2245 Rhode Island Avenue Northeast.
Tickets available at Eventbrite by searching WPFW.
All proceeds to benefit WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Africa World Now Project, Bloombars, and Friends of the Congo present the film Katasumbika, featuring Q&A with the Congolese filmmaker Petnan Daliko Katondolo on October 3rd, 6 to 8:30 p.m. at Bloombars, 3222 11th Street Northwest in Washington, D.C. Katasumbika features testimonies of Congolese detailing the damage to them of resource extraction by multinational corporations. Information at Bloombars.com or AfricaWorldNowProject@gmail.com. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Good afternoon. For WPFW Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Darnia Samuels. Here are some headlines for this hour. Despite the warning given by United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres, warning against an all-out war in Lebanon at all costs, Iran has launched a major missile attack on Israel. The attack comes one day after Israel launched, quote, limited and targeted raids into southern Lebanon, targeting the Iran-supported Hezbollah, which is the most powerful armed group in the Middle East. As of this moment, it is unclear what type of missiles are being fired from Iran and if there are any casualties. However, earlier today, a senior White House official said that the United States was, quote, actively supporting defensive preparations to defend Israel against this attack in case it happened. The official warned that a direct attack against Israel will carry severe consequences for Iran. In the meantime, Israeli officials have advised the residents of about 30 villages in southern Lebanon to evacuate. When Hurricane Helene touched down on the United States last week, it became the strongest hurricane to make landfall in Florida's Big Bend region. It has been described as a, quote, catastrophic Katrina-type event. Now, the death toll from Helene has risen to at least 140 people across six states: North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, Florida, Tennessee, and Virginia. And at least five first responders have lost their lives in the search and rescue efforts, including an 18-year-old firefighter, Landon Bodie, of South Carolina. Continuing with the search and rescue efforts, volunteers in Buncombe County, North Carolina, knocked on more than 300 doors to locate unaccounted-for residents, most of whom were found uninjured. There are also 3,500 federal personnel helping with Hurricane Helene recovery efforts across several states. The help is urgent because, especially in the Carolinas, delivery of much-needed supplies has been interrupted due to hundreds of roads being closed, swept away completely, or even cut off by landslides. Former President Jimmy Carter, who served as the 39th President of the United States from 1977 to 1981, turned 100 today. This milestone makes him the oldest living president and the longest living president in U.S. history. To mark the momentous occasion, a concert was held last month in Atlanta, Georgia. Carter is currently living in hospice care in Plains, Georgia. Several former U.S. presidents sent video messages praising Carter's legacy, owe tens of thousands of dollars. The proposed legislation rolls back some protections that D.C. put in place for low-income residents during the COVID-19 pandemic. Currently, the law protects tenants from eviction each time they apply for the Emergency Rental Assistance Program, or ERAP, for help. That protection exists even if tenants are not approved for assistance. D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser said as many as 20% of renters in D.C. are not paying each month, which costs landlords hundreds of millions of dollars. According to her, landlords are facing more than $100 million in unpaid rent for the year 2020 in unpaid rent for the year 2024 alone. In today's weather, it's currently about 65 degrees in D.C. That's all for your headline news this hour.